Accession number 13358 to H. Wilkinson, reel 15.
Mr. H. Wilkinson, reel 15.
I suppose that the dock would either cover a number of companies, I think maybe it could be the whole battalion, in which case he would certainly have his hands full after an action.
Where did you move to next?
Now, I can't actually remember, but I recollect being entrenched up on this high ground in an orchard. Up to that orchard there was a big climb, I remember that, and there was cattle roaming around in among the fruit trees. And to the left and slightly in front there was, in my trench, there was two chappies, and there was a cow stood quite near the trench. And Jerry had started this shelling and mortaring. And this poor old cow got a big piece of shrapnel right up its private parts, and it collapsed over the top of this trench, just leaving a little corner end, a very small corner end to let fresh air into the trench for the lads. And they started to sweat and shouting and swearing. Anyway, as the bombardment had given up and silence had drained again, we got a carrier up and he put a chain around the cow's leg and hauled the damn thing off, and they came up gasping. Quite pleased to see daylight again, I think, get some fresh air. From there, after a while, I had to take some chappies down the hill and just past where the adjutant's caravan was, as we'd gone down the hill on our left. And farther on in front of the caravan, there was a set of box latrines, and there's two chappies sat on there, and there's a shell hole or two nearby, and it was pretty obvious that the blast had caught them. They were sat there stone dead. From there on, continued up a slighter rise and onto a roadside, and there was, to pick these rations up, and there was a quartermaster there, colour sergeant, I forget his name, and we were just sorting some of the rations out when Jerry started shelling again, and they were coming over towards our way, and one or two bits of metal were flying about. So the lads scattered somewhere and got down, and colour sergeant shouted, "There's a trench," and he jumped in and I jumped on top of him, but being a hastily constructed latrine trench. He was a colour sergeant and I got off light. I remember that. Oh, poor devil. It's a good job it was tin stuff we were handling, nothing else. Anyway, we got our supplies and wended away back to our positions.
How did you keep clean?
Well, by the best means you could. Any available water was always welcome. Other than that, it was a quick wash and a shave and what you could get in your Dixie tin. Clean the thing out as best you could with a bit of rag or clean paper or whatever you could, and a quick rinse and dry, and that was it. Mind, I wasn't too happy about the towels at times. There became times when they were quite a bit sweaty, with having them so long before you could get them washed or squeezed out in some water, a ditch or a stream or whatever.
How often were you able to change your clothing?
I couldn't give you a definite answer on that at all. Sometimes it might be days or even a week or two. If I remember rightly, I think we were in the line about 10 days at one time somewhere. And I never blistered. But what used to happen, my feet used to turn red, and the blood used to soak through the creases in my boots. And my feet would be a bit sore, as though they could do with the cool wash and a bit of powder. But I think the only time I got the odd blister was if I got a new pair of boots. And until they got worn in or padded till I could wear them properly, I was never troubled by blisters much. Maybe short of being on a forced march somewhere where your feet were beating hell for leather, you know, for 20 mile or more. Then just maybe start to get a bit skinned, at least I did. But on the whole, I was comparatively free of blisters.
If your boots were they able to be exchanged promptly?
Pretty well so, I think. I don't know whether you got dead man's reissued or see if they'll fit you, you know, and if they did, well, get them on and get going. But I never had a great deal of bother in the footwear department. Just that when I'd taken my boots off that time, they had no feet in.
Your health and the health of the men around you at this stage, was it good?
Yes, I would say so on the whole. I think from maybe getting the odd headache now and again, or I don't know whether some of the chaps might have got a bit of tummy upset, but nothing seemed to be drastic. On the whole, I would say the health was remarkable for what we were doing and going through. But if you stuck to doing what you were told to do, I think that was one of the main things that got you free from these things. I suffered very little, really, myself. Now and again, maybe the odd headache, but I used to go and get a couple of aspirins if and as and wherever possible, you know. Carry on, it was all right. I don't know really how I got away so freely, because before I went into the army, I'd been knocked with a hit-and-run driver, and I have a groove in the top of my skull. I lost about 13 months' work and a brand new bike, and I suffered terrible. And I was hit when I was about 16 on my way home from work, and I was well into my side, but that's a civvy story, really. But the headaches I suffered and the nerves, I used to sit in our front sitting room by the main road, and as traffic was approaching, I used to cower in the corner and sweat like hell. And the headaches I suffered was nobody's business. And
this didn't continue in the army?
No, as I got to the army, as I was approaching my call-up, the headaches seemed to deteriorate. And as I would say, I was pretty fortunate after that. I remember sitting in the waiting room in Leadenhall Street to have my medical exam. There was a chap next to me. He said, well, I won't get into this lot. I said, oh, why? He says, well, I've just had a fractured skull. I said, it's rather strange, and believe me, not so have I. I said, I was knocked by a hit-and-run driver after I finished work one Saturday lunchtime. Oh, he said, then you'll not be in either. I said, but I want to go in. I said, I have no home, really. I'm in lodgings, and I want to do what my father did, join up like he did. He said, you must be bloody balmy.
This stage in France, what time of the year was it that you were in this area?
Now and then. Well, regarding the time of year, the only thing that I can sort of place it by roughly is the apple trees and that in the orchard and the stage that the fruit was in. Because other than that, it was one day after another. You lost track of time and dates, really, except morning, evening, and darkness, night time. But I should think it'd be round about the August time, just pre-harvest time, I should think, really, for the fruit, for the apples.
Were you beginning to move ahead quite quickly now?
Yes, things seem to be moving faster. I think it would be more or less getting on towards the approach of the valley, where we were chasing him up that way, yes.
Do you have memories of moving through the valley situation?
It seemed to be pretty much continuous moving. We didn't seem to halt anywhere for very long. And now and again we were pulled off the roadsides and we'd have to go wood clearing. And I remember one time we had this wood to clear and you had to contact by whistle and shout. It was absolutely throwing it down. We were saturated. Oh, my grief. But
how do you clear a wood? What's the actual way in which men are used to clear a wood?
Well, the way I saw it was we were a sort of extended line and you kept contact as near as possible in that line according to how the foliage and shrubbery would let you. I mean, sometimes you hit thorns, sometimes you hit like softwood, you know, like elder and things like that, and various bits of scrub stuff. And the trees themselves, depended how close they were. But you were spread out, and there was used the whistle quite a bit, or the sergeant did anyway. And you shouted back an answer if it hit nothing or fired on nothing. Then you were going through and the wood proved to be empty, unless somebody was lying doggo, and that doggo you missed them altogether. I suppose it would be possible to keep quiet and let you pass and let you move back again, form up and think, well, I've been lucky, as you would in a similar situation yourself.
Did you go through with the bayonet?
I believe we did. Yes, I believe we did.
You've mentioned the Bren gun. Were there any other automatic weapons that you were able to use?
Oh, a Sten gun. The Woolworth automatic.
What was it like as a weapon?
Well, it was quite all right at close range, or pretty close range. Not so effective. It'd spray, and it'd be enough to put anybody off balance and make them duck or try to move. But in many cases, I suppose they were hit. But rather an ungainly Heath Robinson sort of a thing. I mean, the sort of the thing that you could lean against a wall or a tree, look at it, and bang it, and go off on its own. There was one instance I recall when we were put onto a lorry. I can't actually remember where it was. I know there was, I think there'd be a platoon of us or near enough of what was left of one onto this lorry, and there was a driver and somebody beside him, and I was at the front, and must have been another NCO alongside of me. Anyway, we were going over this bumpy terrain, when all of a sudden the Sten gun went off. This chap's Sten gun went off, and it put a bullet through the driver's shoulder. And before we could realise what was happening, we were off the road altogether and carrying on across this bloody field, banging him away across there. Anyway, the chap next to him I think had got control more or less and stamped on the brake or something. We came to an abrupt halt, and I think he tended to him as best he could and moved him over, and he was able to drive, and we got back around up the road. Whether it was a spare driver or something to do with MT, I can't remember. But that's the way it was. We eventually got to where we were supposed to get with the casualty.
Do you have memories of the destruction of the Falaise area?
Yes. I can remember on various sides of the roads bits of artillery and maybe half tracks. Anyway, vehicles of some sort that weren't too close, and not were they too close in my, nor are they too close in my memory now, like, but there were incidents of artillery pieces and vehicles that had been left or shelled or mined or something of that sort, wrecked anyway. And if I remember rightly, there was some story. I know as we'd been marching on in this particular area, it was understood that there'd been an old Frenchman jabbering away at the side of the road and trying to get an officer's attention. Well, or somebody's attention, maybe anybody's, because he was gibbering away like a monkey, really. Little old wizened fella. And the story was that as we'd halted some other, or farther on we'd halted, that somebody had gone to see, to try and make out what he was on about. And that it turned out, so the story was, right or wrong, I couldn't swear, but it was rumoured that Germans had called at his farm and was were wanting water, and I think he'd refused them, or something to that effect, and that they'd more or less slaughtered his wife and two sons in front of him and got water and off they'd gone. Just taken whatever they could and held for leather out of it. So whether that is right or whether there's anybody anywhere can confirm that or definitely contradict it, I don't know. That's the story I heard.
At this stage, with the Germans retiring now quite rapidly, were there signs of civilian casualties?
There again, I didn't see any. No, I didn't see any. As I say, that's the story I heard. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but other than that, I didn't see any myself.
What are your memories of the German retreat?
Just that it seemed to speed up, as though, to me almost, as though we were chasing a shadow, hell for leather after something that we couldn't see. No. Later on, we did come across some Americans from somewhere. And what stage it was and where it was, I can't remember. But I do remember we came into contact with these Americans. Maybe somewhere somebody will remember. Or somebody maybe has already remembered.
What were your impressions of those soldiers?
Yes. Well, I wasn't there long enough to judge them man for man or get to know them. In most cases, in war, they were hail fellow well met sort of style, or they were braggarts. But in my opinion, the Americans, I maybe shouldn't say this, I don't know, after all they were our allies, but we more or less looked on them as a supply depot. I think as long as they could come with the goods, we had to do the fighting sort of thing. I think that was a general impression, really. Not having fought with them close to hand, maybe on one flank or another, we heard of them being there, but I suppose at times, like every other soldier, they had it hairy. But the general impression, I think, throughout the army was they were a good supply depot and their rations were better than ours. We could maybe have wished for their uniform at time and their pay packets. I think that's all I can say about them, really.
You mentioned that at a later date, you did have problems with one or two men who broke or panicked.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall those instances now?
Yes, I do, and I'll have to retrace a little to before I mentioned about the wood clearing. We were in a situation where it was, we were positioned, in fact we had dug in just slightly forward of a hedgerow and trees, just so we had a good view ourselves of the terrain ahead and could easily dodge back if it was necessary and find cover. However, these two fellows came up as reinforcements, and I've never ever felt that way about anybody as I felt about these two. But somehow they looked jittery right from the start, and one in fact looked quite like a weasel featured. I maybe shouldn't say this, but that's the way it was. And I think one was sent to the next but one trench on my right, and the other one, the ferret one, was sent to a trench next to mine on my left at a little distance. And it came to morning. I had a quick splash and a shave, and I decided to walk past this trench and go back into the woods and have a wet. Anyway, when I got to this trench to have a word with this chap, there's nobody there. Both this steadfast chap that I'd known all along and the weasel were missing. So I thought, well, have they gone into the woods for a similar reason? Anyway, I looked up and down the hedgerows and round about a bit on the left and a bit farther in over. No sign, sight or sound of them. So I went back and I reported the fact to the sergeant. He said, oh hell, bother. I said, yeah, it looks like it. I said, I wouldn't care, that lad's never been any bother. I said, ask him the least thing, he's do it. Least order, he'd obey it. He says, yes, I know. I said, he's always been a canny chap. I said, I know what's happened. This other bugger's got on his nerves. Enticed him into scarpering. He says, well, carry on. He says, look behind where I am and down to the right. See if you can find anything of them sheltering or doing whatever they want to be doing. So I had to report back that I couldn't see hair in the hide of them. So you had to make it known like and report the fact. Anyway, eventually, it came to a court-martial. And I think it was just after we'd done this wood clearing, if I remember rightly, and we'd sort of got dried out. Yes. Anyway, I dutifully reported to the defending officer, the court-martial, and when it came to them picking on this chap, I tried to defend him. I spoke for him. I don't know whether it was a little outburst on my part that seemed a little bit unfair after what he'd been through, and the way he'd always been such a good character. Anyway, I got bawled out and told to shut up, which I promptly did. And after that, they were put under close arrest. Back in the platoon. So I went to him and spoke to him, and he just said, sorry, Corporal. He says, I don't know, but he says, sorry. I says, I have an idea. And I nodded towards Weasel, and he just looked at me and said, no. Well, continuing from there, he was just exactly as before. No bother whatsoever. Somebody you could rely on.
So he continued with you?
So he continued, yes. Well, I don't know where I lost him off, whether it was up at Gale or where. Memory fades a bit.
Do you remember his name?
No, unfortunately. I can picture him, and I can picture Weasel. I could also picture the other one that was a nervous character, but the names are gone. I mean, you meet so many, you lose so many. You part company for one reason or another.
Had the quality of men that were now coming into the battalion dropped from what it had been?
On the whole, I would say little or nothing. We were getting some younger ones in. But there always seemed to be somebody a bit more, a little older maybe, and a little more used to battle. They could sort of hold them up and help them on, or cheer them on, you know, or joke with them, make them feel as though they fitted in, and that was a good thing. Camaraderie, they call it, I think.
What happened next, Mr. Wilkinson?
Well, we moved on up to the next place that I remember quite well, was Amiens. There's a river of some name or other that runs near. I can't quite recall. I know we were there for a day or two, and I was given a task of chiseling through a wall in this house to fit a machine gun or Bren gun up, which in the event was not necessary. And we also were able to get a glass or two of French beer. Weak though it was welcome. One or two characters I came across seemed to be proper Reds, communists. In fact, one was a chap, I should think he'd be, well, I was a young soldier, I should think he'd be in his late 40s, maybe to 50s, early 50s. And he was, somehow he was arrogant and not a likeable character at all. In fact, he got on my nerves and he was trying to be domineering to some extent. Why or what about, I don't know. But I got that fed up with him, I pulled a grenade and asked him if he'd like a pineapple to himself. Whether he understood or not, but when he saw me draw the pin slightly, he got the hell out of it sharpish. So I pushed the pin back firmly and replaced it.
Was he a member of the resistance, this chap?
No, I don't think so. He seemed to be more like a caretaker type, as though he was the type that looked after this building of whatever sort it was. It was a quite solid building, fairly large.
Were you meeting more Frenchmen now? French people?
Yes, civvies, with being in the town.
And how were they receiving you?
Oh, quite a welcome, really. It was only these particular two characters. I don't know why I had to meet them at all, really. The women and folk were quite cheery and waving. Of course, there was nothing doing. We were in positions. We weren't bothered about that, like.
Were you getting much opportunity for
and
rest?
The chaps were trying to have a quick word now and again as they passed, but couldn't catch all of it. I knew very little French. I knew enough to make myself understood now and again if there was anything in particular I wanted. Probably pidgin French and pidgin English all mixed up. I know we had a chap at one time. He was from Rotherham, and he thought he could speak good French. And he put an I or an O on the end of it somehow, and it was quite laughable, really. It was bloody hopeless. Imagine a Yorkshire dialect trying to speak French with an I or an O on the end of it. It was more like flipping Italian than French.
Did you get much opportunity for rest?
We got a bit more now and again at that time, yes, I think we did.
What did you do when you were in rest?
Well, simply and solely what you say. We rested. If there was anywhere where we could get a glass of beer or a cold drink and a bit of chat, or try and get through to the natives a word or two, you know, just a change of company, really. But other than that, I think it was mainly rest.